And good afternoon. Hope things are going smoothly for you today. Interesting to see rainfall totals across the region. Many folks have said, hey, I didn't get a lot of rain, but I picked up all that much needed moisture that I needed in certain areas. So we're seeing anything from in the Cheyenne neighborhood at about 1.6 inches up to Devil's Lake, about a half inch. Myself, I feel like over the last few days, probably since about Thursday night, Friday, those little incremental rains have added up to getting closer to an inch right here in northwestern Cass County. What's happening for you right now with rainfall? Well, let me know. You can give me a call on the JLA insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. Happy to hear what you're getting and receiving in those wonderful Darter plastic rain gauges that we've been giving out. In fact, tomorrow is another round of Wednesday weather trivia, and I'll be happy to give away one of the rain gauges to a listener who gets our trivia question correct. Those rain gauges are approved by the National Weather Service, and they do an outstanding job of not only measuring rainfall, but snow totals as well. Now, if you are watching today, you can be doing that on our live streams of Facebook and YouTube at WDAY Weather and Ag and Focus, and you can find us streaming live on Acres TV. That would be the Netflix of agriculture, so to speak, with a platform that brings you a variety of programming from all across agriculture, from some of your favorite companies and influencers, and much, much more. Now, mentioning the weather, there looks like another line of storms is likely to start out west later today and tonight, moving into Minnesota by Wednesday morning. There is a chance for damaging winds. Flash flooding is at a high risk, along with potential threats for large hail. There could be some isolated tornadoes as well. So we'll see what that development looks like. And also we'll see more storm development late Wednesday afternoon and evening going into Minnesota and then further along into Wisconsin. So it looks like we're seeing quite a bit of activity in our weather pattern for the week. We're seeing some high temperatures. In fact, today is still anticipated to get to a high of 85 degrees. Holy humidity, Batman. It's been a little bit much so far today. But nonetheless, we're going to continue to keep an eye on where that temperature goes. We are looking at an overnight low in the mid to upper 60s. Tomorrow, a little bit of a cool off, high near 78. And then the rest of the week, we pick back right up again, up into the 80s with, looks like Saturday and Sunday, 87, 88 degrees, be a little bit warmer and a chance of showers again coming Sunday night into Monday. So that's what the weather stands at today. We're looking forward to keeping an eye on it. And as I said, anytime you want to reach out and share your weather totals with me, you can also do that via email. You can send me messages, ag@flagfamily.com. Much appreciated. All right. If you are doing some things today that keeping you out of potential rain showers, or perhaps you've had just enough moisture where you're unable to go out hang, etc., maybe you want to do that final check to clean out the shop or the garage to get rid of those unused pesticides, that you can do at Project SafeSend. That is happening tomorrow, their last day, Wednesday, July 23rd in Valley City. It'll be at the DOT site for Valley City, located at 1524 8th Avenue Southwest. The hours for pickup are from 8 a.m. to noon. Well, I should say drop off. You're dropping it off. And the North Dakota Department of Ag is picking it up, and those items are going to be hauled away and incinerated. Again, this is if you have unused pesticides that need to be properly disposed of. If you have a large quantity, please call the Department of Ag in Bismarck to give them a heads up. And if need be, if you have something that's leaking or doesn't look quite right, you can certainly call them. They also have ways to get that taken care of so something can be hauled away for you as well. So, a few headlines that are going on along those lines of weather. Some hail happened out in western North Dakota after talking to a couple of crop consultants in that region. They said it was a very narrow band of hail that was fairly intense. So, no building damage was reported at this point. It was, in fact, wheat fields and other grain fields that were heavily damaged. I hate to see that happen, because right now, for an area that consistently is told they're in drought conditions, they seem to be picking up enough rainfall and a lot of their crop looks good. Just about 2 to 3 weeks ago, I was out in Medora, and frankly, when it's green in that neighborhood, it's always a bit of a surprise. But we did see a nice looking crop out in western North Dakota. Pastures are full as well. So if they have a chance to graze some cattle or make some hay out there, that's always a really good idea to get done as soon as you can before something goes a little bit too far and damaged. Now, potential damage that could be moving into the region, tar spot. Tar spot has certainly been accounted for in multiple states. It's been affecting corn crop in about 16 different states at this point. When you see tar spot, it is small black spots on the corn leaves. This disease is taking yield upwards of 30% when it's untreated. There are several fungicides that are available to treat tar spot. The downside that's a little hard for many of us is that it gets to be later in the season and you have to make two decisions. One, am I going to spray this on by air because now my corn is pretty tall and I'm not going to be able to get into that field in order to spray it by ground? So what's my decision on application? And two, there are some folks that their corn crop doesn't look great and they may have to make the choice of whether or not they're going to put more money into it. Now, if I was in Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Nebraska, I would definitely be treating for it because I realized that that came in a little bit earlier and I could probably stave off some of that yield loss. Up here, where it's a wait and see situation, it hasn't been confirmed as of yet in North Dakota. We have seen it in southern Minnesota and South Dakota, so keep your eyes peeled for the potential for tar spot. Hey, to all of you gardeners out there, be paying attention to what could be happening in the gardens as well. You know, one of the most common diseases, as it's called, is blossom end rot in our tomatoes. Frankly, it's not even a disease. Blossom end rot is a deficiency, primarily calcium. So there are ways to amend your soil, your water, to add in additional calcium so that you can make sure you are preventing that blossom end rot from happening on the fruit of your tomato plant. The other thing is that drought is a significant factor. Now, if you rely strictly on rainfall, this year, you might feel, depending on where you're at, you might feel that you have some drought affecting your tomatoes. But if you are watering at home, make sure that you are doing a consistent amount of watering. Because if you're not, that inconsistency where the plant thinks it's in drought is when it starts to develop the blossom end rot. You can even dissolve calcium, unavailable calcium, into the water as you're watering to supplement that plant so that you can make sure that it's getting exactly what it needs. If you're over-fertilizing with an ammonium-based nitrogen, a potassium, or a magnesium, that can affect your calcium uptake and distribution within the plant. Also, cultivating too close to the tomato plants could damage a root system. That also will impede the water and calcium uptake for that plant. Now, I can give you the general overview, but if we want to talk about very specific questions when it comes to some of the situations we have with tomato plants, well, tomorrow is going to be your opportunity. I'll have Don Kinsler joining me, and Don, of course, the expert when it comes to horticulture and gardening in the region. I've always wondered if Don decides to pick a day to retire, who's going to be able to find that USB port that's hopefully cleverly hidden behind his ear so he can download that wealth of knowledge that Don and other researchers from NDSU Extension have so that we can make sure to continue to have that knowledge and share it with those who might need it most. Some of that knowledge would become extremely helpful to young farmers who are just getting into their business. American Farmland Trust has been helping to do that with beginning farmers. They've awarded $2.8 million in grants to over 200 farmers and ranchers from across the region, and they're doing it through their Brighter Futures Fund. Of these recipients, 113 of them are beginning farmers, and it really shares the commitment that American Farmland Trust has to support the next generations of stewards and ensure a very resilient and equitable food system. This is in its fifth year. If you are interested in applying for some of these funds, you certainly can. You'll find that information on the American Farmland Trust website. And this year's producers are really excited about getting these additional funds, whether it's helping to start their own produce operations, perhaps they're renting some of their starting farm ground, and additionally, they might be even just buying a few head of livestock to kick off their production. I think about this as a lot like what we do with FFA or 4-H when we award mini grants to students so they can start their programs, their supervised ag experience programs. American Farmland Trust seems to be doing it just more of at a adult level so they can get more people involved and certainly back onto the farms where they want to be. It's wonderful to see those opportunities out there. And again, if you're looking to apply or are curious about those details, you can find them on the website for American Farmland Trust. Anytime that you're looking for those things and you're not sure where to find them, you can email me, ag@flagfamily.com. And I'll always take your questions. And you can do that by reaching me on the JLA insurance phone line at 701-293-9000. Well, we have an opportunity to air our segment on the auction block. That'll be a conversation we have with Brad Olstead of Steffes Group. Brad's going to be joining us when we return from a livestock market update that will come to us from the American Ag Network. So stay tuned. Don't forget your questions so we can bring those up. Talking about used equipment on the auction block will be coming up next.
I got a 4020. Hey, look at there. It's a nice one. It's a clean one. Got a power shift. Hey, look at there. Give me 25,000. Oh, hey, down 37 pie now. 40. But how about 42 and a half? Do you want to do it? 42 and a half. It'll be 45 now. 47.5. I'm 46 now. 7. Want to beat you better bid? Time's up. Sold it. 46,000 right here. Buyer number 970.
Oh, and we all know that auctioneer's chant. That means we are about to have an On the Auction Block segment with Brad Olstead. Brad, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Just coming through North Dakota, driving through some rain and some thunderstorms, and now I'm just kind of popping out, and weather's coming. But, boy, the crops look good. A lot of people are kind of thankful for the rain. Some places a little too much, and maybe some of that white combine stuff. But it's North Dakota weather at its finest.
So, did you see any of that hail damage that happened on Sunday night? Are you close to that Belfield area, et cetera?
I did not get to see it. I saw pictures. It almost looked like January there when I saw the pictures.
Yes, it does. So, Brad, number of questions for you. Okay, as a guy with a lot of equipment experience, in fact, I even text you from time to time myself with questions. Right now, is this a time that if a farmer is looking to be buying something from the construction side of the business, backhoes, payloaders, skid steers, is this a great time to be buying, or is there a better time of the year to find some of those good deals in the used market?
You know, we're right smack in the middle of the construction season. So right now, demand is probably very strong. I think sometimes the best time to buy is after the season. You know, everybody gets to reevaluate things like that. But when it comes down to construction, that's pretty much high demand, especially for the low-hour quality pieces. And the price of new is not coming down. So if the opportunity exists, you know, really, you just have to take advantage of it. And but I would do it after the season. Seems like that's the best opportunity for purchasing construction equipment.
So if you're talking about a season, what about for combines as we're rapidly approaching harvest here? I know it's not going to be very far away before we have barley and other small grains that are going. And I do have some farmers that sustained damage on their equipment in the storms that we had back at the end of June. What are you seeing for that equipment that for harvest? Are you seeing an uptick in combine prices at auction?
Right now, it's a little bit too early. The low-hour clean combines are still bringing a good price. The late model stuff is still discounted. And to be honest with you, a lot of people are still working with their insurance companies. And there's a little frustration out there in the marketplace. They don't have the ability to pull the trigger on doing something to replace it because they don't know where they're at with their insurance. And that's pretty much area-wide, whether it's a bin system, a building system, or a piece of machinery. Insurance is the biggest hiccup right now, and they don't know where they're at.
Well, with any luck, we'll start to see some turns in that. And I know there are some farmers who've said, look, I just have to have a plan. I'll have to sort this out with insurance later because I can't just wait and hang in this, you know, just in this unknown, in this gray area for the time being. So I get what you're saying, Brad.
Yeah, I tell you, the combines, though, that are available on the marketplace, what I'm telling people, if they have the opportunity and they have the wherewithal, this time frame is going to be the best time probably in the next 3-4 years to purchase a combine. The prices, although they are discounted, they're still holding up there, but opportunity for the farmer. Again, the new price of machinery is not coming down, and there's a lot of good inventory out there to purchase a combine.
So because people are currently looking, and because we know that as far as this crop is concerned, there's been some damage, we're concerned about low commodity prices, there may be a few folks who say this might be my year to get out. Have you noticed any sort of an uptick in retirement auctions that people are calling and thinking about having a retirement auction with their equipment, Brad, or is it you're seeing that things are staying pretty steady right now?
I think overall things are pretty steady. We're talking to a lot of people that are in that, you know, mid-60s, early 70s. They don't have a generation to pass it down to. They're talking about doing something in calendar year 2026. Even out to 2027 because they're doing some planning. But overall, and we just got done doing the Glazo farm retirement sale today, and we had just under 1,000 people participate at that online auction. Tad Scarrood was handling it right there. I just got done talking to my family. Prices good, clean equipment with a good pedigree, still in high demand. So those are all good things we can tell to somebody thinking about having a retirement sale or thinking about ending their production ag career. And that's all really good news, Bridget.
I tell you what, you mentioned pedigree of the equipment, et cetera. And that was a question I actually had written down for you today, Brad. How much does the reputation of the farmer play into having a good sale, whether well-attended, good prices, that type of thing?
You know, it's a very important statement, and we have to be careful because everybody has a different opinion about quality. But when you have a named reputation farm that has a reputation of taking care of their equipment, putting it inside the machine shed at the end of the day, good service records, and all those things that come into that pedigree, you know, type of description, people from long distances will come and participate in that auction. Prime example, some of the sales that we had this year, Landis McDonald had a very nice sale. Mike Nelson right out of Mapleton, North Dakota, again, good quality reputation. Equipment sold very, very well. And if people will come far and wide, and a percentage-wise, minimum 15%, sometimes a 20% premium, just because of the quality of the equipment.
You know, one question I also had for you, Brad, is loader tractors. It feels like there's a lot of market that's upholding the price on loader tractors. Folks have a pretty strong demand for them. Are you seeing that in our region as well?
That is correct. You know, and the strong commodity prices in livestock, livestock prices, you know, those are some of the driving points. Loader tractors are used pretty much 365 out of the year when they're working with livestock producers. And so when they want to update, they want to do it, and they want to do it quick, and they want to have quality. And those prices are holding. There is a lot of inventory out there. And so there is some price pressure on certain models. But overall, the loader tractor market is still strong.
So, Brad, just to highlight, as I look at your website, you've got quite a few sales that are closing today, tomorrow. Some of those that folks might be interested in include Neva Semitel's livestock auction. They've got some livestock equipment that they're selling off. You also have Charles Hetland Estate Farm Auction at Hannaford. That is closing tomorrow. RDO has an excess equipment auction that's coming up, and I think there's probably so much more. Is there any one in particular that you're thinking of right off the top of your head that looks like that's a sale you want to make sure to highlight for listeners?
Well, I think with our website, we're pretty much publishing them all, and there's good quality attributes about every sale. And I think it's wise to have your listeners to go into our website and check out each individual auction, because there's going to be little nuggets of every sale that somebody's going to be interested in a quality piece. and to specialize anyone in particular, we're featuring them all, and we're giving them all their due. So we just encourage people to search through the website, go to the particular auction, scroll through the lot listings, and trust me, they're going to find some excellent opportunities for purchasing equipment and helping out their operations.
Well, much appreciated, Brad. In fact, my next guest has joined me here at my home studio today, Greg Amundson, and he's got equipment in my driveway that's headed to one of your sales. So this was really quite the perfect opportunity for me to visit with both of you.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Brad, and folks for listening. Just also remember that anytime you're thinking about your equipment, you also need to be thinking about what's happening online. Tech Support Farm should be one of the places that you look at most closely when it comes to keeping your cybersecurity safe. If you're bidding online with Steffes, you don't want anybody hacking into your emails or looking at what you're doing, so you want to make sure to talk to Chris to get that covered. We're going to take time to touch the bottom of the hour news, and when we return, we have Greg Amundson with us to talk about root connections, and we'll be right back. Oh, and welcome back into Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for joining us today. It's a busy day here. We got lots of guests, lots of things going on, and in fact, I wasn't going to be able to be in the studio today, so my guest just came to my house. And Greg, the best thing about doing that, you brought cheese curds. I really like it. You can pick that mic up and hold it right to you.
I do it again.
Oops, let me turn you up a little bit on your mic. There, I bet.
Okay.
Now.
Yeah, well, I do what I can. You know, I hate to come empty-handed.
I appreciate you not coming.
I didn't get a chance to put my makeup on, so I figured I got to make up for it somehow.
It's going to be all right. You brought me popcorn and cheese curds. Greg Amundson from Gilby, North Dakota. What's the story on the popcorn?
So the popcorn, this is it's called open pollinated black variety. We raised it on our farm last year.
Okay.
So that's, you know, popcorn from our farm.
What do you do differently with that? Anything versus how you're raising your field corn?
That stuff we actually picked and shelled by hand because I didn't dare put it to the combine and get it all mixed up, and then I had to pick it all apart.
Interesting. Okay. I'm just making sure I have all of your sound and whatnot going through right there. Okay. So just really, you can run this through our any combine. Do you clean your machine ahead of time so you don't
when you do popcorn, you clean your machine ahead of time, and then you want to make sure it's dry because if you break off the tip, yeah, it doesn't pop very good.
Oh, I bet not.
So you want it to be dry, fairly dry when you combine it, and we're in North Dakota, so you do what you can do.
Well, I'd say this works out pretty nicely. Would you compare it to like an 80-day variety?
This is around an 80-day corn, yeah. This is an earliest one you'll probably find. It was actually developed down by Wimble. Anyways, down south, there's a...
Somewhere with a W.
Yeah, somewhere with a W. Yeah, anyways, they developed it down there.
Okay.
So it pops up. It's a black kernel. It pops up. It's white with a little black inside. It's actually really meaty. It tastes good.
Is there anything that you can do that differs the taste? Like you said, so this is a black one.
Yep.
If you had like a white seed or a yellow, can you notice something different in the flavor of them?
I don't know. Popcorn's kind of popcorn.
Okay. Just add more butter.
Seems like this should taste a little different.
Okay. Just keep adding more butter and salt, and it should be fine. All right. That's what I would be going with as well. Well, all right. That's not the only reason you came today. We came to talk about an event that you do on your farm called Root Connections, and it's coming up on August 7th. So give us a little background, if you would.
So I've been on a lot of boards throughout the years, and you always hear basically farmers are trying to kill us.
No.
I'll just put that in a nutshell. That's kind of how it goes.
Okay, wait. I'm going to stop you right there. Farmers are trying to kill us. I think the thing people forget, they're like, oh, farmers do this stuff in their fields to try to kill us. Why would we kill our buyer?
Well, that's just it.
Okay.
You know, I always tell everyone, I wouldn't raise anything on my farm that I wouldn't feed my kids.
Yep.
And I ever talked about pesticides and all this other stuff. You know, my family lives right in the middle of our operation.
Yeah.
So what affects me affects my family.
Sure.
And I'm going to do the best I can not to put my family or the neighbors or anyone in jeopardy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
And so, for you, you just thought other people should see your practices.
Yeah. So pretty much, went down to, I'm not trying to showcase my farm here. That's not my goal. But, I just got tired of hearing stuff and nobody knew what was going on. And, I live up at Grand Forks, so it's a pretty urban area up there. And just the disconnect. It's just mind-boggling, the disconnect.
Oh, yeah.
People hate when you say this, but you don't know what you don't know.
Oh, that's
very
true.
There's a lot of things that I have no idea about in the real world, but I'm not going to second guess what they say because they know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But yet when it comes to a farmer, they can, the population usually second guesses everything we do.
Absolutely. And so what have been, this is your third year doing it.
This is our third year. Yep.
And you literally open up the farm and say, come on out and see what we do.
Yep. The first year we did it at our farm shop, at our actual farm.
Mm-hmm.
That worked pretty good, but I'm tired of having to clean up the shop. And, you know, the yard's pretty well kept, but yeah. You know, just having to clean up the shop, to have people in it. So we're actually doing it at where I live, which is 2 miles away from the home farm. That's actually our home farm.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my dad grew up mm-hmm. and was born. So that's kind of important there.
Yes.
And we do it there, and it works out really well. We have a big open space and a shed, and it works really well.
What's some of the feedback that you have gotten from people who've attended?
Most of the feedback I've got has been pretty positive. You know, well, I didn't know farmers did this, or mm-hmm. I didn't know this, or, you know, now I understand why you do this, or, mm-hmm. you know, we put machinery out there, we put prices on the windows, and a lot, you know, it all goes by feedback. You know, they're like, well, we didn't know this was so expensive. You know, we didn't know that this was so much involved.
Okay.
And so then we sit down and tell, you know, basically tell everyone, you know, we all have something in common. We all eat.
Yes.
And we just go through the scenarios and stuff. Just open our farm up and just, you know, if people want to go for a tractor ride, and this year we have combine rides, we're maybe going to get a livestock component through the national NDLA, through 4-H, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Just to let people know that, hey, this is what we do. You know, this is our livelihood. We're not going to jeopardize it.
So for those who are able to watch on our live stream today, you can actually see the invite that Greg has for the August 7th event. And again, it's called Root Connections. It's at his farm by Gilby, North Dakota. You're pretty much opening it up from 4:30 to 7:30. At 5:30, there'll be the NRCS, National Resource Conservation Service, is doing a water simulation demonstration. Supper, there's a barbecue picnic that night.
Yeah, we have a world-class barbecue outfit that will create something especially and kind of special for the kids. I don't know. I don't give a menu. I just tell them, you know, we want food for about 125, 140 people, and he just does whatever he wants to do. I don't question him. I just pay him.
So this will be the third year I've been there, too. I've come up each year. And I think some of the things that I notice that stand out the most is just people come with their curiosity. I've never had someone be blatantly angry about anything that they heard or saw there, but they're curious. And I really appreciate their curiosity when they come in. There's activities for kids. From coloring books to hands-on demonstration that the kids can do. I think for the adults, the most eye-opening thing has been the year you did the root pit for the mm-hmm. corn, and then also just seeing the equipment and the pricing on the equipment.
A lot of people comment on the way you do the water infiltration test and it shows the runoff. That's a big hit. Mm-hmm. I was amazed how many people are just drawn to that.
So when you say shows the runoff, what you're talking about is when a heavy rain comes over bare ground versus when it runs through a grassy area.
It shows you how much water goes through, how much runs off, what runs off, if there's soil runs off.
Sure.
It's very eye-opening. You've never seen it before.
So really it's demonstrating what's happening for erosion, why we use grass waterways, why we're doing a better job of erosion control in our fields.
Yep, pretty much.
You're the guy that doesn't like labels, which
no,
I really appreciate.
I hate labels.
So for you, you're not saying I am a conservationist. I'm not a cover cropper. I'm just doing the things that work best for my farm.
Yep. So basically, we do anything possible to eliminate erosion and get a crop, whether that's no-till, cover crop, tillage, you know, all sort, anything we have to do to get it going, we will.
So I am going to ask this question, though. Does that mean someday there might be livestock on the Amundsen Ranch?
We've had cows out before. It's hard to find someone that will bring cows out in the field and watch them. But there might be. I don't know. It depends on what the kids want to do. If my son comes back to farm, I told him, you got to bring an enterprise with you.
Okay. He's got to have a plan.
Yeah, he's got to have a plan. He's got to do something.
Now, as a guy who is also serving on the North Dakota Corn Growers Corn Growers Association, not the council, because the council does the research side.
Yep.
So what you do with corn growers, how eye-opening has it been to be a part of that board?
It's been very eye-opening. The biggest thing that's eye-opening to me is when I go to D.C.
Yep.
I just got back last week, so I'm actually on an action team for National Corn.
Yep.
So I go out there and help with some of their policies, like corn reputation, which involves, you know, just not influencing, but educating lawmakers and all that stuff. So just being out there, being a, you know, attuned to basically getting off the farm and seeing what's out there,
mm-hmm.
and finding out different things,
mm-hmm.
and just, it's just so eye opening.
I often see farmers mention that, I don't have time, and I get it. We've all got a lot of stuff going on, but there is a leadership gap right around our age group. And it's from about the 30-year-olds to about the 50-year-olds, because that's the time I think you're busy raising your kids. You're very heavily much running the farm, and folks don't necessarily feel they can take the time to be on some of these boards and whatnot. But what's your advice to them?
So basically is, anyone's got the time, you just got to make it.
Yeah.
So like, I don't go to the lake. I'm not a big fan of that, but I mean, you
not
just make the time.
Big swimmer kind of guy.
No,
here.
I can't swim. I don't float. Let's put it that way. I don't have a body for floating. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
So I mean, everyone's got their vices. So when people are doing out to the lake, going on vacations, doing other stuff, I just as soon try to better our industry.
Yes.
So I was just on the way here. We were on my wife and I went to the National Leadership. NCGA Women's and Leaders Mentors Program.
Oh, yeah, I saw that advertised.
Yeah, and I got roped into it because they all know me there and I'm in pain. So that was just on a team's call there on my way down. And one thing that we talked about was, you know, when do you get involved?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people say, well, wait till the kids get older, you know, and stuff. So I actually got involved with North Dakota Corn. My youngest son was 9, and I actually think it's perfect time because mm-hmm. my son, my oldest, which is 17, he went with us to DC last year.
Yeah.
And he went with the DC this year.
Yep.
Last year he was 6, so he didn't do a whole lot. This year he went to museums during the day while I had meetings. And then when we got done, he went on went on the Hill,
mm-hmm.
went to the Capitol. We ate at the Capitol. He got to meet Hovind and all these other people, introduced himself as North Dakota's largest and youngest peanut producer. So he loved it. You know, it's great because I'm able to expose him that way.
Yeah. Kids need to see that. They need to see what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Yep.
And that will hopefully instill in them.
So that's why I said, well, when's the best time to get involved?
Yeah.
Anytime.
Anytime.
So you make it work.
What does your son think of the trip to Washington, D.C.?
Oh, he loves it.
Okay.
He's just like me. He loves to go out there, but he wouldn't want to live out there.
None of us would. No. Well, maybe some people listening would, but I'm not there.
It's not for me. You know, people call it the swamp. Part of the reason is because it's so hot and humid there.
Oh, good Lord, that's awful.
I think
awful.
When we left, we went to we didn't have much time. It's, you know, it's not a vacation trip.
Yep.
We had a couple hours, so we stopped by Arlington on the way out. And it was 93 degrees with a heat index of 110.
Good Lord.
And it was unbearable.
So usually this is about the time where I take a break and we go talk about some other things. But I'm going to ask you to stick with me because, well, you know, you're here in my office, so why wouldn't you? Because I got a couple other things to ask about. Some of them stem from my conversation with Brad Olstead with Steffes Group. So I want to ask about that. And then as a farmer, think about this when we come back. I want to ask you, with Trump saying that, all right, we're going to ask Coca-Cola to switch from high fructose corn syrup to cane sugar. Let's talk about what that could actually mean. And personally, I feel like it's a lot of rhetoric. So we'll do that when we return. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. We are raising wheat this year for Here We Grow 2025. If you're looking for our field, it is southwest of Gardner, North Dakota. Feel free to drive by. It is a mile south of the junction of County Road 11 and County 34. You can click the QR code on the sign and you can be eligible to win a rain gauge and a $100 gas gift card for giving me your bushel gas for our yield. A couple of our partners with it would include Codeco Fuels and Propane. Whether you are planting, harvesting, or the dead of winter, your shop doesn't stop, and neither do they. They will make sure you have diesel fuels, propane, other bulk fuels, and oils as well. And then Ellingson Company. We've been getting some nice rain, and every once in a while I do see the drain tile running. But think about it this way. With land prices and wanting to increase the value of your land, drain tile might be a way to take care of that in your region. So check them out at Ellingson Company. So I have my guest with me today, and that is Greg Amundson. He's from Gilby, North Dakota. He is hosting an event called Root Connections, which I'll be posting on our Facebook page so everybody can see the details for that on August 7th. But we've been talking off air about a number of things. One of them has to do with the auctions. And when I was talking to Steffes, Brad Olstead, you had a couple of things that come to mind when you think about an auction.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So when it comes to an auction as a farmer, you know, you see these you know, advertises farm retirement or a liquidation or excess equipment. You know, the way you advertise something really matters.
And how it looks when they get there.
Yeah. Oh, it's huge because there'll be times that you pull into a yard and if it doesn't look good, I'll just turn around and drive out. You know, yards make a huge impact on everything because if they can't take care of the yard, I don't think they can take care of their machinery. So that's for me, that's a big one. I know a lot of farmers are probably the same way.
Well, you want to buy quality.
Yep.
Absolutely. Buy quality.
And it makes me wonder, well, these excess equipment auctions and stuff like that. Well, are they just run it till it's dead and then sell it? You know, what's wrong with it? You know, stuff like that. So, I mean, there's a lot of questions.
I think that's a reasonable question. Got something caught in my throat here. Anyway.
Well, it wasn't a cheese curd because you haven't touched them
yet. I haven't touched them yet.
So.
My next question, though. Let's talk about Coke and what President Trump wants to say about changing over.
Yep.
Using corn sugar or corn syrup to cane sugar.
Yep. So that's been a big focus of ours with National Corn is talk about, with the MAHA movement, everyone's heard of that, the sugar, the cane sugar, all this other stuff. So when it comes, I'm not as worried as some people. Okay. We'll see how it all shakes down. That's the biggest thing. He came out with his social media posts about, using cane sugar. Well, that's not practical. There's not enough cane sugar in the world.
There's not enough cane sugar to supply that.
Cane sugar is hard on the soil. You know, there's so many factors that's probably not the best.
Right.
Sugar can't supply it all either.
No.
So, but working together, I mean, you know, once you take the molasses out of the sugar, there is no difference between white cane sugar and white beet sugar. There's absolutely nothing.
Nutritionally speaking, they're all the same in your body.
Yep, they are. There are. The only difference is, like, you ever hears about cane sugar, raw cane sugar. Well, it's still got the molasses in it. That's the only difference.
And frankly, this gives this gives Coca-Cola a chance to make some changes.
It does, in a way. So I listened to a podcast the other day. They're talking about, some of these companies, some of these voluntary changes they tried a couple years ago. Well, they didn't work because the consumer didn't want them.
No.
A lot of what we have is because consumers are different. Between the additives and bread, between the additives and this, and all sorts of stuff, and what's in our food, a lot of that's consumer driven. Because if it doesn't taste good or look good, they don't want to buy it.
We like pretty food.
Yep.
Whether we're buying bright yellow bananas or however it looks after we cook it and microwave it, we like pretty food.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're talking about with the food dyes.
Yes.
How the candy business has stuck together and said, no, we're not getting rid of the dyes because our customers want the bright colors. You know, Mars, I think it's 2016, tried something like that.
Didn't work.
Wanted to buy it. Nobody. Absolutely nobody.
You know, what's also part of the problem here is we got to remember when we talk about the food dyes in candies and ice cream, that shouldn't be the main part of our diet either.
No. The problem is everyone's trying to make junk food healthy.
No.
Where it should be is just moderation.
It's still junk food.
I'm not, I have a Dr. Pepper habit. I will clearly admit that. But the problem isn't that make Dr. Pepper better. It's drink less.
I can help your habit. I can slip some zucchini to you on your way out the door today, out of the garden.
Well, I didn't lock my doors. Everyone puts zucchini in unlocked doors. So.
All right. Thanks, Greg Amundson, for joining me today. For those listening, stay tuned for the Jay Thomas Show. He's up next.